Are you ready, Ryan? I'm your host, Andy, and I don't care what anyone else says. When I look at the new Idyllic Tutor art, all I see is the Master Hand from Super Smash Bros.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
That's literally all I see.
And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle. And did you know that Erebos had two horses?
No.
That way when he whips, he gets nay nay. Yeah.
No.
Please listen carefully.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
Especially Commander.
And we have a special guest with us today.
Who's that?
It's Anthony. It's Judge Anthony.
Hi.
We are talking about Commander League today.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to share with everyone what we experience every Monday. And I think a lot of people are seeing leagues pop up all over now. And I don't think they were that common in the last few years. Commander Versus, I think, has been a huge pioneer on YouTube.
Yes.
For this.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the same point system, but I guess there's some things that are similar, some mm-hmm. things that aren't.
Yeah.
So, do you want to do a quick introduction?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, I'm Judge Anthony. My name is Anthony Gordomania. I am a judge, level one judge from Clinton Township, Michigan. And mm-hmm. I judge often at our local game store, including the Commander League, as you said, which has been kind of my project for the past few years now, and I put probably way more time into than I should have.
How many years? So you inherited the league from its origination. How long have you been doing the league?
So I've been doing the league for about 4 years. The league itself is, as far as I know, about 9 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what year did Commander start?
Commander as a format?
Yeah.
So Commander as an officially recognized format, as far as I know, was about 2010 or 2011. And it was created, I think, in the early 2000s by a bunch of really high-level judges.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Really notably Sheldon Mennery, who's still, like, the face of the format.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they've been doing it, at least Gamers has been doing this since day one, then, is what it sounds like.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, they were really, really early into pushing Commander.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, and like you said, leagues have been popping up a lot recently, but at the time, I had never even heard of anything like a Commander League before Gamers did it.
So. Right.
You got bowling leagues, you got all the leagues, and now we got Magic Commander leagues.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were like standard leagues and modern leagues where you just track your performance, but that's in a 1v1 format. That's easy to track.
There's prize support for standard leagues. Like they have that reliquary tower, that fancy one. Mm-hmm. That was one of the league prizes. Fancy. Yeah. I don't even know if any of the places around us have standard league. Does Gamers do that standard league? Because I think you have to have a lot of people show up for those to have a standard league actually fire.
Yeah. I think they tried doing a standard league, but it was during that especially low dip in standard attendance, and I just don't think it made it.
You mean like the past 3 months? No, different one.
Different one. Oh,
okay. a different dip. Wait, what was the last dip? What are we mad about now? Right now, we're mad about green things. What were we mad about when the last dip happened?
Probably also green things.
We were probably mad about green things then too.
It wasn't colorless things.
Ooh.
I started when everyone was mad about colorless things.
You started when bans were normal. You didn't see a standard that didn't have a ban. So when Coyle started during Amonkhet, right?
Yes. So Saheeli Ray and Faladar Guardian were already banned when I started playing standard.
Wow.
And then the other energy cards came in.
Or I guess Saheeli Ray wasn't banned, just Faladar Guardian.
No, just Faladar Guardian.
Yeah. And yeah, so then Teemer Energy saw some bans.
Attune with the Aether. What's the guy that draws a card and makes two energy?
Rogue Refiner.
Yeah, Rogue Refiner.
Smuggler's Copter.
And Aetherworks Marvel.
Aetherworks Marvel was the first one banned.
That one was bad.
Yeah.
And then we moved on. And then there was bans. Were there bans from Amonkhet? Nothing got banned from Amonkhet, right?
Ramunap Ruins.
Ramunap Ruins was banned.
That was from Hour of Devastation.
Okay, from the block. From the block.
Yeah.
And then Ixalan had...
Ixalan had
the Raptor ban that makes 1/1s. Yeah, so is this your first standard with no... No, there's bannings right now.
There's bans already.
Yeah.
There's been a standard period where there were no bans, though, right, for you? Because once the Raptor was gone, there were no bans for a period of time.
From Dominaria? Dominaria didn't see any bans.
Nope. And so then Guilds came out and Ravnica Allegiance wore the Spark.
Yeah, there were no bans there.
No bans. And then...
I still think Three Fairies should be banned, but that's just a personal preference.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, I think also would agree.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
But then they printed Oko and then people were like, okay, maybe three fairies, fair.
Yeah. Well, I know that with leagues circling back, mm-hmm. I think that it'd be nice if we saw some support from, I guess, Wizards as well for like promos for leagues. That'd be kind of cool. But I don't know how then they would have to regulate a league. And I don't know if they want to do all that.
Right.
Especially because they don't regulate Commander.
Yeah, there's no sanction. There's no Commander events.
Yeah, I agree with that. There would be kind of, especially for me, a conflict because the way that I run our league is not necessarily how other people would run it. And I really like where our league is at. And mm-hmm. it would be nice to have that support. But if that meant changing the way the league works, I'm not sure if I would be all for that.
Okay. So if they wanted to support it, but exactly the way that you had it right now, that...
Oh, I'd be so happy.
they're like, Anthony, send us your rules.
Oh, yeah.
We're instituting this across the board.
Oh, yeah.
Your rules.
I think really the best thing would be if they said, yeah, we'll support Commander leagues. We don't care how you run them. Just if you have a league, we'll support it.
Yeah. And
that would be great.
That would be. Because otherwise, I think, just like in Standard, like even if you're game shop has house rules, they can't use the house rules for an officially sanctioned event
for a league, then.
And then people could just be bringing CEDH decks all the time, and that's not always
feels like sometimes
everybody.
People do
sometimes
I have taken some decks and I've said I can't bring these to league anymore, they're just not fun. they're just too consistent.
Well, and
I can't.
I think it's kind of interesting because one of your decks is actually very efficient when it comes to getting points in the league, and I think that's kind of something I think is really fun, an extra thing to build around. Is it's not only you got to win the game, but it's not even necessarily you got to win the game, because you don't have to win the game to get the most amount of points, because we have all these different things you can do. Because I know, like in Commander Versus, which hopefully is what everyone's familiar with, it's what I'd like to make a comparison to, the really only like outlier point other than like winning or killing someone is getting first blood, which isn't necessarily what you want to do in a lot of decks, but it's an extra thing. It's like, oh, I got to put in a few one drops just so I can try to get this.
Before we could go too far, I guess,
sure.
In, let's do a brief description of what Commander League, I guess, actually is. It's like a point system
mm-hmm.
that helps you to, or I guess helps encourage you to build decks a specific way so you can get points at the end of the league, which we have prize support in store credit. So,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of rules, and and actually they were just pared back within the last like 3 months.
Right. I found that the point sheet was getting a little bit bloated.
Okay.
And there was, especially for new players, it was way too intimidating, way too many points. Some of them were kind of holdovers from different eras of the league. And I decided, okay, we need to restructure this, make it simple again.
Yeah.
Bring it kind of back to the roots of the league.
Gotcha. So there's things in there like if you deal combat damage the first time to somebody, you get a point. Or if at the end of the game you have 25 or more cards in your graveyard combined with exile, you get a certain number of points.
Mm-hmm.
If you win a game, you get points. If you take somebody out, you get points. There's a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can share that list later or something if you're interested in starting a league, if you don't have one in your area.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a lot of things before, like, well, and there's also negative points, which is kind of nice.
Right.
So if you take a certain number of consecutive extra turns, you don't lose points. You give points to your opponents, which I do like that you don't actually lose points for it.
Right. Yeah. That was actually a change that I instituted after I took over. It was something that I'd been kind of tossing around as a suggestion to the person who was running it before me. And the idea behind it is that I want Commander League to be a place where anybody can walk in at any time, say, I just want to play Commander and I don't care about this point sheet. I only can come this one night anyway.
Yeah.
So I just want to play Commander.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be able to support that. So the idea of giving that person negative points didn't really make sense because they don't care about the points.
Right.
And who is ever in a pod with them kind of got the short end of the stick because they are kind of locked out of getting points because they were potted with this person.
Right.
Yeah.
So instead, we award points to that player's opponent. One, it feels better if you are the player doing it because you're not getting penalized per se. And it feels better for the people who are having it done to them.
Right.
Because they're at least getting something out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's meant to kind of make up for the points they would be missing from a more fair game of Magic.
That's true.
I like that a lot because there was one time Coyle played a deck.
Okay, so this is funny because it was literally my first time I ever went.
And
to
I was
for Commander, and, you and I was two... in a pod with Anthony.
Right. And I think that was game two because you ended up winning game one, which I was in, right? I think that was game, or was that game two?
No, I think this was game one that it was, I was playing my Nicol Bolas Super Friends deck, and Nicol Bolas the Ravager.
Mm-hmm.
And I accidentally went infinite, and I didn't know the combo was in there with a Tezzeret the Seeker. And a copy of Tezzeret the Seeker with Jace's Spark Double to get all of my artifacts out of my deck, including Chain Veil and just infinite activations to get Jace Unraveler of Secrets and emblem him.
But you didn't, though, because the table looked at you and said, are you going to do it?
Oh, no. I emblemed him.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow. Yeah. What a monster.
But I could have just plused him an infinite amount of times to scry one, draw one. And just get my answers out and then
do you have Lab Maniac in that deck?
No, but I could exile everyone's libraries.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone else appreciated that.
They did, but they didn't appreciate that emblem down that countered their first spell on every single one of their turns.
I guess there was another knight then that I was thinking of, but it was like you played so you give your opponents points if you play like Sol Ring, Grim Monolith, Mana Crypt before your turn three, and it's 2 points each time.
So it's 1 point awarded to each opponent for each time that you do it. Yeah.
Okay, so you played all three before turn three, and I was like, I'll take 3 points.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This is really great.
Turn two, Nicol Bolas, the Ravager.
I get the most points. I feel like I get the most points when someone else plays a completely broken deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is somewhat by design.
Yeah, someone played like the Narset Enlightened Master, and they took like 7 turns, but they played everything, all those broken rocks before turn three, and then they took like 8 turns and they were like, you guys get like an extra 7 points. Oh, okay, cool. I mean, I guess I'll take the 7 points if it's nothing. I've had a night where I won and I got like 3 points, so
yeah.
Yeah, that's the hidden secret, right? If you really don't care about points, the way that we have our prize structure set up is that even someone who cares not at all about points and just wants to win can totally get prizes at the end because they just win a lot.
Oh
yeah. It is maybe not the most fun for everyone, but it is there.
True.
I try really hard to support every type of player.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, are there any rules that you had or tried to institute that didn't work or you had to like reverse them later?
Yes. So there was kind of this idea that I've been kicking around where I wanted to, instead of award the players, well, I guess I should start this off with saying, at the end of the game, the players that lost the game get a certain amount of points for like the person who died from the highest life total, the lowest land count, lowest non-land count.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this idea, I was like, oh, but I don't want it to be from zero. Because if it's from zero, then it incentivizes people to do things in a weird way so that, oh, I sack all my lands and have 0 lands and I'll guarantee myself that point. So even though I lose, I'm definitely getting that point. And so I changed it to be non-zero. And that caused way more problems than I ever expected.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah, because people would, you know, lose in a situation where they're just playing totally fair or whatever. Somebody cast Cyclonic Rift and then killed them and they had no creatures.
Right.
And suddenly their count for that was zero, and they were out of the running for that point. Totally. Mm-hmm. There was no way they could get it. So that one was particularly bad. It was a little bit disastrous. But there's definitely been a lot of points just in general that over time we realized didn't really work, especially when I took over. The person before me had been trying out a whole bunch of different points, and a lot of those got cut because they were just kind of not fitting in with where we were at anymore.
That's fair. Now, I know, like you said, I have seen people who play like aristocrat decks and stuff, and they do sack their board if they're about to lose or something. And I know there's the enchantment Squandered Resources, so you can sacrifice your lands, and so you could technically do the same thing. But there is a negative point of messing up someone's mana base, Maybe if you mess up your own mana base, you should get the negative points too.
Okay.
Just to counteract it.
Yeah, if you're playing Armageddon, we frown upon that. So you give your opponent points if you destroy their mana base. But right. That also, there's an argument though that you said that if you remove, like, if someone's playing a three color deck like Sultai and you remove all their blue sources, that's considered messing with their mana.
Yeah, effectively, you have Armageddon then because mm-hmm. suddenly a significant portion of the deck just can't be cast anymore, including their commander.
I appreciate this rule.
Someone did that to me in my Jorian deck, and it was like, it was the one where like you scoop up all your permanents and then you reveal cards from the top of your library to reveal that many permanents and put them on the battlefield.
Oh, is that the, it's a green card. It's
Great
a green,
Aurora?
Great Aurora.
Yeah. So someone played that on me, and when I got all my cards down, I didn't have any more red sources, and I literally went, oh, this is awesome. The deck's mostly blue anyway. It's like, nope, you get extra points now because your mana base got messed up. Yes, this is awesome.
But I think that regulates the way that we build the decks, which is nice because people avoid playing cards like that because if they are actually trying to win with points, mm-hmm. they're going to give their opponents extra points and they don't want to necessarily give them. And then that makes everybody feel better because you're not destroying lands or taking 7 turns with Expropriate.
Right.
But by 7, I mean, you know, potentially 4 if you're in a 4-man pod.
That's true, but it's only ever 1.
But if you twin cast it, I guess you're getting
it
maybe
8. It should
eight.
Only ever
it
be 1.
It should only ever be 1.
It is unfortunately not always 1.
I love when people are like, you can take a turn. I don't want to give you my 1. Oh, okay. That's better
so
than your 1 permanent.
Instead of stealing your 1 permanent, I win the game?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
But so another thing about that, you know, we talk about land-based extra turns kind of stuff. I did want to ask you about alternate win conditions because there's a lot of points about killing players and targeting permanents and stuff. And so there isn't a huge incentive to just win the game with an alternate win con and not interact with other people's boards. So there's really you don't incentivize solitaire magic is what I would call it.
Right. Yeah. We want all of our games to be as interactive as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you can't play an interactive game and then win through one of those alternate win conditions.
Right.
Unfortunately, a lot of the decks that do run those alternate win conditions are very uninteractive. They're basically built to only win by, you know, milling yourself out with Lab Maniac or something like that. And what I also found was that people really don't like losing to them. And they let me know. So part of my job as running the league and why the store has one of the players really run it as opposed to them is because the players hear the chatter at the table.
That's fair.
I have a much better idea of what the people who actually are there every week think about, what they like, what they dislike. And especially when Approach of the Second Sun came out, that was a really, really popular win condition for a brief period of time there. Mm-hmm. And it was not a good environment for a few weeks in that league. So that was partially a response to that. Before, we didn't have a point associated with alternate win conditions, but that one now exists on the sheet because of that scenario. So personally, I don't mind alternate win conditions.
Right.
Much like I also don't really mind Armageddon. But
what?
Yeah, that doesn't bother me that much as long as it's cast in a time that makes sense. But I don't build the point sheet for the magic I like. I try to build it for what people generally want.
That's so fair. Yeah.
How do you feel about like a Maze's End? That's a pretty good way, Kat.
I think that's great.
I love it.
If you can win with Maze's End, awesome. It takes a long time.
I won with it two times last night.
Nice.
That's so good.
Even when you like accelerate it out, it still is like, there's a lot of time to respond to it and disrupt it. So it's a feel good win in my book.
I cast Circuitous Route 3 times in one game last night. It was Circuitous Route, Progenitor Mimic on an Eternal Witness. I made an Eternal Witness. It came back Circuitous Route, played it. They destroyed the Eternal Witness Progenitor Mimic, and then I played Tamio, the Simic one, returned it to my hand and cast it. That was great. 6 gates.
Now,
3 turns.
Now, before Andy puts this card in his deck, how would you feel if he scapeshifted for a Maze's End win?
I forgot about it. Okay, so I might feel a little less good about it, but I mean, it's still pretty fair. right? Because Scape Shift makes them come into play tapped, correct?
And they come in tapped
so
either way.
So at least there's a turn, unless you have Amulet of Vigor, in which case, well...
Or just the mazes end already and I just sack the basics or something for them.
Just as a quick aside, should you be running Amulet of Vigor in that deck?
I probably should.
So many tapped lands.
I know. The problem is... Niv-Mizzet Reborn can't grab that card.
That's true.
And it also can't grab Scape Shift. So it'll feel real bad when I flip the 10 and I lose both to the bottom. But it happens. Mm-hmm. And I don't run any tutors in that deck.
Right.
So.
Well, it can't feel as bad as flipping 20 cards and only grabbing two of them when I copied your Niv-Mizzet with my clone.
And he had Yarok out. So he looked at the top 20.
And got two.
Two cards. Top 10 got two. The next top 10 got zero.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
pretty bad.
Yeah,
it was pretty rough for you.
But it was fun.
It was very fun. He goes, there's a smart play and a fun play. I'm going to play the fun play. Of course.
Good on you.
So we also have something at Commander League, which Coyle wanted to talk about today. And I noted it down here. And we wanted you to talk about the non-mandatory but highly encouraged Mono Red October and the origins of this.
Okay, so Mono Red October, if I'm remembering right, started as a joke by one of the players at the store, Adam, who just kind of offhand had made the pun, the hunt for Mono Red October. He's like, guys, we have to do it. So then we spent the next like 3 hours just talking about potential rules for Mono Red October, which are... You have to play Tybalt the Fiend-Blooded. If you draw him, you must cast him. And you must tick him up whenever possible, unless you can ult him. So we also toyed around with the idea of everyone must play Blood Moon. But that, especially at the time, was really expensive.
Oh.
Yeah. And Tybalt, by contrast, was like $2. So that was a much easier rule. And yeah, the whole idea is everybody will play Mono Red during the entire month of October in every game.
Yeah.
And it is a wild, wild metagame.
It's a weird
month.
It's a weird 4 weeks.
You think they're going to go fast, and you'd be right. but you can surprisingly build like some pretty good control decks playing just Mono Red, and you can really develop a metagame of one color.
Yeah.
This year we saw a lot of new decks. Yeah. And by a lot of new decks, I mean we had Torbran and Ilarg.
Yeah. Oof.
And both were nasty.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. Torbran, I had one turn 5 win, and I couldn't believe it. But then Ilarg, I was in a pod with two Ilarg players, and
that
I was like,
a lot of fun.
Who's going to drop Blightsteel Colossus first attacking me?
It's a lot of ham.
Well, it's coming, I guess. Yep. This is so much ham.
It was. We went ham in that game.
You went ham. No, that, and then I saw the Mono Red Chandra. It's a lot of commanders you never see, which is kind of nice, like a theme month.
Yep. Right.
And I propose like Mono Blue like February, and no one went for that.
Yeah, that seems boring to not play Magic.
So you're presenting an entire month where we play regular commander.
There's a lot of blue at our league.
Yeah, that's true. We could all play Mono Black. I'm cool with that.
What if we all did Mono White?
That would be...
Seems pretty fun.
I really wish that there were better white commanders, only so that a Mono White month would be more interesting. Because I actually would really like to do a Mono White month.
Because otherwise it would just be like Tishar and SRAM.
Yeah, like Tishar, SRAM, Oketra from War of the Spark.
Oh, yeah.
And then somebody's going to show up with like something wild.
You're
going to
play Nahiri, the Nahiri, the Planeswalker, that can be your commander, Nahiri? She cares about equipment as well.
Oh, true.
I don't know if she's that good, but
I
had the precon
with her as the precon.
Yeah, I had the precon.
That's
pretty
good.
I added a couple of cards too. I don't know what I added, but I don't have the swords or anything anymore, so I don't really play an equipment deck.
I saw a deck on YouTube once of the guy that whenever you take damage, you make a 1/1.
Daring King of Kildor.
That one seems really cool because like you can tap your Ancient Tomb and make 2 1/1s that way. And as long as you have like a Soul Warden out or something, it's just your life total doesn't change. You just get free 1/1s.
Yeah, Darien is really good.
Yeah.
If you really build into it, it seems weird to put a City of Brass in a mono white deck, but
all the
generates
lands.
Free 1/1s.
Yeah.
I played against a Kithian Hero of Akros deck too. The Kithian that flips into the Gideon and makes you fight it's like everybody, yeah, one creature has to attack you, and I don't know if it's good, but it's there. Elish Norn would be miserable.
Yeah.
Would it?
I guess maybe not, because you're all playing white.
Yeah,
I mean, unless you're playing a bunch of tokens. Elish Norn would be really good against Darien, King of Kaldor.
It would be really good.
Sorry.
That would be good against the Githian deck.
It'd be good against... Yeah.
Yep.
I did see someone built the Sephara Skies Blade, the one that has like kind of feels like Convoke, because you can tap four untapped creatures you control and pay white instead of paying for her. And it's a 7/7 flyer that has other creatures you control flying, have indestructible. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of fun. I'm just looking at the mono white top cards right now for Commander.
Do you have to tap flyers in order to cast her? Or
no,
just any
it's just
creatures?
Four.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And pay a single white. Yeah, that's really good. That Commander actually seems really good.
Yeah.
My favorite, and if I were to build mono white, it would probably be Mageta the Lion, but it also seems totally miserable to play against, so maybe not. But it is Wrath of God that you just get to keep casting forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, it incrementally
it
costs
itself.
Two more, right?
It doesn't destroy itself. It destroys every other creature.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm trying to find it on Idiotrek, and we're still scrolling.
Oof.
Where are we at? There's the Myojin.
That is also kind of miserable.
Remove a divinity counter from it, destroy each other creature.
But it only gets a divinity counter if it casts from your hand.
Right.
Which they have produced some good lands in some of the precons.
That's true.
And I guess a blue card. Commander Vacuum.
Oh yeah,
something Vacuum.
Yeah, Leadership Vacuum.
Leadership Vacuum. Yeah. Although you can't play that in a white deck because it's blue card. So
I mean, there's that one mono white commander that has Bushido, right? Isn't there one that cares about all the samurai?
The Smiling Cat.
Kentaro, the Smiling Cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, for one and a white for a 2/1 that has Bushido 1, and you may pay X rather than the mana cost for samurai spells, where X is that spell CMC.
Because you need the mana fixing in your mono white deck.
You never know.
I think the only other one that would be miserable in mono white is that Hikori Dust Drinker.
Oh, yeah.
Because that destroys lands.
I've played against Hikori decks. Granted, that was CEDH. Back at the beginning of when CEDH became a little more formalized.
Yeah.
And that was not super fun.
No. Well, we have Mono Red October, and then maybe Mono White some random month one day. That would be fun. Well, we'll see, because we're getting a lot of stuff this year.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get like 10 good Mono White commanders.
Yeah, I doubt it. No. Yeah, no, I doubt
it. We're getting 70 new commanders just from one set. Plus other things.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get like 5 mono white.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
Because I can't say, because they're probably going to want to do a lot of multicolor cards.
I
mean, people, I think, generally like multicolor more than monocolor.
And there's a lot more monocolor. Like, we did the statistics last week.
We did. There's black and...
Black and white, actually.
Black and white have 109 legendary creatures that you can play with. And I think the least is like red.
Yeah.
Red is 91 or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but...
But I think that's right. I think it's red. No,
it's like off by like 20 almost.
Or does blue have the least? What's blue have the least? Well, either way. But when it comes to two colors, there was like Rakdos, which had like
Rakdos
17
had,
or something like that.
Yeah. Izzet had 19. I think Rakdos had the most at like 37.
Oh, okay.
Or 36.
Oh, yeah. Izzet had 19 and 3 of them are Niv-Mizzet.
3 are Niv-Mizzet.
Well, yeah. And just Izzet, if you... count all commanders, there's 4, right? Because there's also
Niv-Mizzet reborn at the 5 color that I play.
Yeah,
there's 4 Niv-Mizzets that, and they're all legendary, and mm-hmm. I think they're all played. I mean, none of them are bad,
but
no.
We can't get a mono white commander with card draw.
SRAM is
that's the
very,
only one that you can argue
good.
Sure,
but you have to play only auras and equipments, so hope you're not trying to draw into a card that's not an aura or an equipment.
Endless Atlas only goes so far.
Or Mind's Desire.
Ooh.
It's expensive to do that.
I just like playing Mind's Eye.
Mind's Eye.
Yeah, no, I like Mind's. I mean, I play that in the red decks too, because red, you don't get a lot of straight up draw. It's a lot of looting. But
they have that drawback. When you draw, you have to randomly discard or something.
Right, which
or
might,
just discard after you draw.
Which, if you're playing Felden, maybe it's not a drawback. But you know what? I didn't see any Felden decks the last Mono Red October.
Which was really interesting.
There usually is one. Adam usually plays Felton.
Yeah, it's usually Adam. That's the one that he built for the first Mono Red October, okay. And he kind of always rebuilds that one. So I was surprised that he did.
He played Sir'Kara this year.
Yes.
Which was really good.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And wins out of nowhere.
Mono Red Storm is a thing that you can do, and we saw it happen. For I sure. like it a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Back to League.
Oh yeah,
you know, we're reminiscing, you know. Right, now we'll have to give updates later this year to see if anything's come to fruition. So our league is 6 weeks,
right?
Is there a reason behind the 6 week time frame, or is it just because you don't want it to go too long? Or
so 6 weeks was what it was when I took over.
Okay.
And the reason that I kept it is I actually really like that time period. It gives people kind of enough time to show up to participate in any league. Like 6 weeks is pretty long, good month and a half, and you only really need to show up to about four to prize out, so it gives you time. You can miss a couple without being too far behind, but also it's short enough to where if you're doing bad in a league, well, the next league isn't that far away,
right?
And if you want to play a league from the beginning, the next league is not that far away, so it's always pretty close to the next one, while also being long enough to feel like you have a chance to impact your standings. I feel like 6 weeks is just kind of the right middle ground number.
There's some other stores around us that do, I think this last one was like 16 weeks. It was long, and your top seven scores matter.
Yeah.
So people are trying to really power out like weeks where they're getting like, so you play two games with the same group, so you don't switch at that one, and they try to power out a lot of points. I actually like both formats.
Yeah.
Like I don't mind that they're completely different.
Right. It was actually kind of nice playing in both, and I would play different decks in both.
You
of
play
those
different
leagues.
Decks because mine, you know, the ones that I think I'll do better league wise, point wise, because I do care about points. In the one is completely different than the one in the other.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
They do things. There's another league that does, if you deal 20 damage or more to yourself, you get points.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But I feel like Crick decks take advantage of that.
They sure do.
That's fair. Yeah, that seems like it would be.
They have when War of the Spark came out, there was, I think it's called like So It's War. And if you destroy three Planeswalker someone else controls?
So they have Assemble the Gatewatch, which is if you control three Planeswalkers, you get points. And then So It's War, if you kill three Planeswalkers, you get points. And yeah, it's an opponent control.
They have a lot of Super Friends decks there, and they're not always oppressive. So I think they were just trying to reward people for actually playing a card that's not the best card type in this format. Planeswalkers are not a great card type in general.
Correct.
In Commander. You have to be dedicated.
Yeah. That's why I built my Kess control shell around my Nicol Bolas deck so that it could actually be competitive with some of those. And it works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, I thought that was probably the most interesting was the dealing 20 damage to yourself. They had to make it steep, though, because you can deal 3 damage to yourself by accident a lot. I mean, if you're using the land. Tap, you take 2. Ancient tomb.
Right.
I mean, you can if you use it 3 times, you've dealt 6 damage to yourself. And at one point, someone had suggested 10, and I think I was the one that was like, I don't know, make it 20. Then someone really has to be dedicated to killing themselves in that game.
Oh yeah.
And but you do see towards the end where they're like, well, I'm at 18. Don't kill me because I just got to do 2 more to myself. Yeah. And you leave that person alone. You shouldn't leave that person alone because they might be able to do something really nasty the next turn.
Just kill them.
Just take it out. But I do like that now you've changed it to, instead of just having a certain number of cards in your graveyard, it's graveyard and exile.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of a long-standing issue, would be people are getting to, so the number used to be 20. Mm-hmm. People would get to 18 cards in their graveyard, and they're so close. But if you have that many cards in your graveyard, it's usually because you're a graveyard strategy, and someone's going to try to exile your graveyard.
Would you
sure. So it would be like, oh, I had 18, and it got exiled. Then I got another 16 and it got exiled. And I wanted the points to reflect your contribution to the game and like how much you were trying to play the game in an interactive manner. So if you're milling yourself a bunch, usually it's because you're trying to execute a game plan. So even if it gets exiled, you should be rewarded for having tried to execute a game plan.
Yeah.
The idea is it keeps games from stalling out and just people just doing nothing.
Right.
As commander games sometimes tend to go.
And I guess there's also the point where if you destroy X amount of creatures or permanents all at the same time.
Right.
So yeah, again, rewarding people for, you know, interacting with other board states.
Yeah. I wanted people to be rewarded for having an impact on the game.
I like Ashiok Dream Render for that.
Ooh.
Because you inherently get rid of all your opponent's graveyards. I like that a lot. That card has turned out to be way better than I thought it was going to be when I played it. And I think I cast it every game now. Even if you only mill four one time, you exit all your opponent's graveyards.
That card's text on its face should make me hate the card in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah.
Because you can't tutor and it exiles graveyards.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of my favorite planeswalkers.
Oh, I think it's great.
I think it's really good.
Ashiok only ever targets me. I only ever target myself with the mill.
Really?
I never milled another player.
Oh, well, because you don't exile yours.
Right. It says each opponent, but you can target any player.
Right.
So you always mill yourself.
Does it say players can't or opponents can't search? It's opponents. So you can still tutor if you really needed to.
All of Ashiok is one-sided. That card is much better than an uncommon.
Yeah.
I think yesterday I got to downtick Ashiok four times.
Yeah, you did.
Wow.
And I think I board wiped two times in between those four downticks. Yep. So everybody was... And there was stacks of just in exile.
Yeah, I would have gotten 25 exile.
Yes, you would have.
Because you milled me every single time.
He was playing a card that likes to... He was playing Yarik. And, mm-hmm. I mean, he had multiple ways to bring stuff back. And there was a Rampaging Balos in the graveyard. And he had to go. Because it came back once.
Yeah.
It wasn't coming back again.
Yeah, that's true. It didn't. I lost that game.
There was a Sire of Stagnation that was in the graveyard. And that came back under someone else's control. And then I had to destroy it and then exile it.
My Sire of Stagnation was out twice last night and did not see one trigger.
You're correct.
I know.
Not even one.
Not one.
And you had Yarik out for the one when it didn't happen.
Correct.
You would have drawn four.
Draw four, and you would have gotten four.
I had a smothering. I had a smothering tide out.
Oh.
I think I have drawn fewer cards off of Cyrus of Stagnation than the number of times I've cast the card.
Yeah.
More I would times, believe that.
Yeah, more times that I play the card, I get nothing off of it.
People,
it just eats removal.
People really hate exiling cards from the top of their library. And honestly, like if someone else played a Sire of Stagnation, I wouldn't have that much of a problem with it.
I feel like people have more of a problem with Sire than they do with Consecrated Sphinx.
Yes. Which yes, they do.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Nope. They do.
Yeah. I mean, if their only option though is to have if they're playing a combo deck and they're afraid to lose one of the combo pieces, I get it. I get that. That would be my argument for that.
So one it's two cards. Statistically, you shouldn't be worried. Unless you're a land, if you're a landfall deck, okay, you got to get rid of that.
Right. Yeah. That now it's a problem.
Now that's a problem.
Is it a 4/7 Sire of Stagnation?
5/7
Yeah, 6 mana 5/7
For a Dimir Eldrazi. Blue, black, and 4? I think it costs 6.
Yeah, it costs 6.
And it's a really good card.
It is a very good card.
And it doesn't have colors. It's devoid of color.
But makes you pay the color to cast it.
It does.
So for the league, though, I guess one other question. I guess the last question we had is, so we have a note on here to talk about competitiveness. And so I know that a lot of people build the decks obviously to take advantage of the points, but even if they didn't care about the points, do you think that people are playing more competitively now? And do you think that that's because of the league or just because of the general commander environment with people trying to maximize benefits in commander decks?
So I do think it's a lot of both. I will say that competitiveness in commander seems to have only grown regardless of what I do with the point sheet.
Yeah.
I think part of that is that Commander has become a lot more popular. The cards are getting a lot more powerful. Since they decided to start designing cards for Commander, the format just naturally has gotten a lot more powerful. There are a lot more tools for deck building. There's a lot more in terms of information and resources in order to build a better deck. And in some ways, I think introducing a point system gives people incentive to try and maximize. The way I see it is that in instituting the point system, I've drawn a line. So this is what the top end of acceptable power level
we think should be. And people seem to react to that by saying, okay, I'm going to get as close to that line as possible.
Yeah.
I'm going to push that limit. And in some respects, it's created kind of an interesting metagame. And I think in a pretty interesting way, our internal metagame has been kind of ahead of the curve mm-hmm. in terms of what Commander as a whole has looked like. Usually it's about 6 months to a year ahead of what Commander decks really look like. But at the same time, it can lead to some feel bad moments in times when people were not expecting a certain level of competitiveness.
Sure.
We have people that'll show up to play, and I'm like, you know, you don't see them often, or they come one every 6 months or something. And they either come with a deck that doesn't do a whole lot because it's a very casual deck, or they come with a, like a CEDH deck that, that someone won with Flash Hulk this last week. And I remember hearing about it. Yeah. Cause someone walked over to the table and was a little, they didn't know really what that, that combo was. Cause I mean, I'll be fair. We don't see CEDH decks at the league. I don't see that level of play.
Sure.
And it's kind of nice because it's terrifying. I was stressed out when we played at Command Fest Chicago. To be fair, I was stressed out the whole time, and I didn't enjoy it. A lot of people do.
I enjoy it.
And we had telepathy out. I played telepathy because I was like, well, that's good in CDH, right? Because I should know what they have. I felt worse knowing what was in their hands because I didn't know how I could even deal with it. And then the whole time, you know, trying to look at, because we played two-headed giant CDH, and I looked at his hand, I looked at mine, and I said, well, I have four counter spells, right? I mean, that's good, right? And
It
didn't work. We still lost. But I think it's nice not seeing that. But people who play Flash Hulk, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen the three of us here understand that combo. When it happens, someone looks at it and then they get a little frustrated. So like, that seems not fair. Like, it's a thing, right? And it happens. But it was someone who I had actually never seen before, and the game was over in like 5 minutes.
What? I'm curious though, what colors were they playing? Was it four color Flash Hulk?
Oh, I don't remember. All I know is someone came over and they were playing like a five color deck, and they just said, yeah, okay, we just lost to Flash Hulk. It was just, we didn't realize what was actually happening, and we didn't have an answer for it. And that happens, you know. True. You just see it coming. You're like, oh, we're losing this turn. Yeah.
Well, get ready for more efficient Flash Hulk piles, CEDH players.
Yeah, because of Thassa's Oracle.
Thassa's Oracle is stupid.
Yeah, that card's really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Laboratory who?
Yeah.
Maniac what?
We don't care about Laboratory Maniac anymore.
Three mana.
Jace Wielder of Secrets? Mana. That's four mana.
What do you mean I have to have no library for this card to work?
What do you mean Laboratory Maniac has to be on the battlefield in order to win?
See, I don't like this.
Yeah.
This one just looks for the devotion, right?
So yeah, looks at your devotion and you scry that many, or you look at that many and then put one into your hand. And then if X is your devotion to blue is more than the cards you have left in your library, you just win instead. So when that card enters the battlefield, the ETB trigger goes on the stack. So it doesn't even matter if you kill the card afterward. Where with Laboratory Maniac,
it's just on the stack.
Yeah, with Laboratory Maniac, you could at least target removal it with something, as long as, you know, they didn't also search for a Grand Abolisher or something, because that's typically what a Flash Hulk pile will have. Now you don't need it.
I mean, I do like seeing it. I'd like to do it one time.
Oh yeah, I'm putting it in a deck.
I'd like to do it one time, and then it feels bad. I mean, last night I won a few games and I felt actually bad. I felt bad. I was like, I don't want it. That's reasons I'm trying to power down certain decks. It's just, they're too consistent. So I have to, you know, play the either more expensive cards, expensive as in mana cost, so it happens slower, or just play maybe some less efficient spells in some decks. But I feel like this one's going to get people a lot.
Yeah.
It's all the chatter online.
It is. They should ban it.
Already? That does not happen.
That does not happen often.
The
last time that they banned a card before a set dropped was Worldfire.
Was that the last time?
I think that's the last time it happened.
But I am saying specifically for Commander ban. It is fair in all other formats, to the best of my knowledge.
Sure.
I can't think of how to break it without Flash Hulk. I'm sure it exists out there somewhere, but...
Yeah, when Worldfire got printed, that was banned just outright because those types of cards just get banned in the format.
Yeah.
The kind of the shame with Thassa's Oracle is that even outside of the win con part, it's just a good card.
It's a very good
card. I just want to play it in stuff, and I'm actually like worried about putting it in decks on the off chance I might accidentally win.
Oh, yeah. Is there a blue devotion deck that people play now? I mean,
I wouldn't think that
Thassa, you would even want to get Thassa online in a Thassa deck.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you definitely would have to build in a certain way for it. But usually if you're playing mono blue anyway, I would want Thassa's Oracle.
So you can at least scry X.
Yeah. The baseline effect of the card is a creature that casts sleight of hand when it comes into play,
mm-hmm.
which is really good. There's already a card that does that, and it's 3 mana, and people play it a lot. So
that's pretty true.
To knock a mana cost off of that and have the potential to see even more cards just seems really, really good.
Yeah. And you get new Thassa as your commander.
So you could just keep blinking it.
A free Conjurer's Closet. Indestructible.
Well, it's not free. You have to pay 4 for it.
Well,
it doesn't just happen. Conjurer's Closet.
A cheaper Conjurer's Closet that's indestructible.
Right.
With upside.
That card is really good. Though I will say I did a Scryfall search of all of the possible cards that have enter the battlefield, leaves the battlefield, and when this becomes tapped abilities in mono blue, it is not an impressive list.
Really?
Yeah, it is. There are some really good ones and a lot of duds. So
okay.
Thassa might be a better in another deck card than it is a commander, but
like
maybe
in Rune or something that blinks things. I guess it can be played in Yarok as well. And
yeah, and you get double really triggers. Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, double triggers are always great.
I think there's a lot of value cards in this set that I just want. Like, I don't think I need like 20 cards. I think I need like 6 or 7 cards from the set that I just got to get in foil.
But
and then I'm good. But and I don't even think they're all mythics either. And I think from Throne of Eldraine, the only card that I needed was Sage of the Falls in foil for the Locust God. And otherwise, I don't think there was a single card in Throne of Eldraine that I needed. The lands were great. I actually think that those castles are really good in Commander.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree.
I'm still not buying the black castle. I don't like it that much.
Oh, I really like it. I've had it in play. It's been very good.
If you can drop your hand, if you're playing Cabal Coffers, you're probably dumping your hand and you only lose one life then when you draw the card.
But see, this is another non-swamp now. And I already play a lot of... I'm already very aggressive with my non-swamps in my mono-black deck. And my mono-black deck right now is Ayara, which would... Or I guess it does tap for black, though.
It does.
So I guess that's okay. Does it come in tapped?
Nope.
Only if you don't control a swamp.
One swamp. Oh, okay.
The deck I played it in is also Ayara.
Yeah.
I guess I said nope because I assume you're not playing it turn one, but...
Well, even if I did turn... Nope. Got a Dark Ritual turn one to get Ayara out. Sorry, can't play it.
you play Dark Ritual in Commander?
You play Dark Ritual to get Ayara out on turn one.
I mean,
absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
That does seem pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if I run Dark Ritual in Commander. I'd be afraid to. Just because
it's extra mana.
But what if I need to cast a spell that costs, I don't know, only one extra mana than I needed, and then I have 2 that I can't use? What a waste of a spell.
You mean you have 1 that you can't use? Because it nets you 2. Because you have to pay 1 into it.
Right. Okay, so let's say I have 2 lands, and I pay 1, and then I have 4 mana, but I only need to cast a spell that costs 3.
Right, so
I guess I only have 1 extra mana that I can use.
Yeah, now you can leave your land up and threaten Vampiric Tutor before your next turn. Threaten it. You don't have it, but no one else knows you don't have it.
I guess those spells are really good to get something out a little sooner than they should have been out.
Yeah, but only if you have room for it. I mean, if it doesn't do anything for you, then it doesn't do anything for you.
Right.
It's good in like Kyrick, though. 2 life, 3 mana.
Yeah.
That's real good.
Ugh, Kyrick. It's a very good commander. Anyway, well, thank you for chatting with us about Commander League.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Where can our listeners find you? Can we find you on Twitter?
Yes, so I am on Twitter at Fungrove Elder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Fungroveelder. Dungrove Elder, best creature ever. Don't at me. Actually, do at me, please.
Please at him with all of your Commander League questions and, I guess, Commander questions in general. He likes to respond.
Yeah, I would love to answer more questions about Commander. It's the only thing I'm good at talking about.
And then after this, if you would be so inclined as to allow us to share the league point system.
Oh, I'd love to.
We'd love to share that. Yeah, so you can all check that out. We'll post it on Twitter. We can post a link to that on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we only have one segment left. It's Commander of the Week.
Commander of the Week.
The segment where we break down a commander by its parts in just a few minutes.
Who are we doing Commander of the Week this week on?
You tell me.
I want to do it on Yarik the Desecrated.
Energy.
Yeah, so this is Yarik the Desecrated. When it first got released, I really liked the card, but so did everybody else because it's a really good card. And I wanted to build them, but I didn't want to build them 100% because everyone was doing it. So at the time I suggested, hey, let's everyone in our small play group build $25 budget decks and let's do something like that. So I decided I wanted to build Yarik, and originally I said, let's not include commander costs, because at the time Yarik was $10. Yeah. And immediately everyone in our group chat said, let's include commander costs. So I originally made a $15 Yarik deck with Yarik as the commander. And I actually do have that deck list, so I will post that deck list. But since then, I actually quote-unquote upgraded this deck. I do feel like it has been a downgrade overall, but it's a lot more fun. It is a Yarik energy deck. If you can think of a better commander for energy cards, let me know, but this is the best one I thought of. So Yarik is a 3/5 death touch lifelink for 2 and black green blue. If a permanent entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, the ability triggers an additional time. So this is very similar to Panharmonicon, except it also Panharmonicon only sees creatures and artifacts. This will see lands and any other permanent that causes your permanents to trigger. So in energy, you have a lot of cards. When they enter the battlefield, you get energy counters, and Yarik will make it just so you get double those energy counters. So I guess the main payoffs are to just use that energy to win the game. One card that was actually used, I don't know if it was used in Modern or if it was only used in Standard, but Electrostatic Pummeler was a card that a lot of people like to use. It's one of my main win cons in the deck. It's much harder to win with Electrostatic Pummeler in Commander than it is in a format like Standard or Modern, where you only have 20 life, where Commander you have 40. Electrostatic Pummeler is an artifact for 3 generic mana. When Electrostatic Pummeler enters the battlefield, you get 3 energy, so with Yarik, 6. And then you can pay 3 energy, and he gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is its power, and it's a 1/1. So you just, like, have 30 energy, hopefully, at some point, and you just activate it 10 times and get him up to, like, 40 power and kill someone with it. You know,
it's bigger than that, right? If you activate it, like, 10 times?
So it goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32... Yeah, okay.
So I was like, it's way bigger. I played that in Standard, and I remember you just needed to get to 20.
Right. Unfortunately, since I don't have red or any of the like green combat tricks to give it trample, I have to get around it, make it unblockable. And there are a few things. There are only really like 25, 26 cards in the deck that care about energy, because there's a lot of garbage energy cards out there that I didn't want to include. And, you know, maybe they're right in the right decks. In this deck, they're garbage, so I didn't include that. So it is supported by a Landfall Matters portion. I play Risen Reef. I play Wood Elves. I play Obnixilus the Fallen. All cards that care about landfall triggers, gain life, drain people, make some big things. I play some control elements just to keep the games going, like Reclamation Sage, you know, to make sure Andy doesn't have a Smothering Tithe ever. That's the important
part.
That card
sees a lot of hate.
Get some steely stuff in there, like Hostage Taker and Agent of Treachery. But really, it's all a lot of control cards outside of the energy. My biggest energy payoffs after playing this a few times... definitely has to be Demon of Dark Schemes. Demon of Dark Schemes is a powerhouse in this deck. So for 3 black, you get a flying 5/5. And when he enters the battlefield, all other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. So with Yarik, it's -4/-4. Very good synergy, since Yarik actually has 5 toughness. So Yarik will live to this where nothing else will. Whenever another creature dies, you get an energy. Then you can pay 2 and a black and pay 4 energy and put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control tapped. So this is even nice when it kills all of your own creatures, because then you can just bring them back and get their ETB triggers twice again. Overall, the deck's been really fun. It's not very good. It wins. It wins sometimes. Yeah. It's not great, though. But it has been a lot of fun, and I have been focusing a lot of my commander play into having more fun than just pumping out wins as fast as I can. And this has been a blast. This is my second favorite deck to play right now after my Morophon Everything tribal deck. So yeah, I will post the deck list for this. I'll post the deck list for my original $25 deck tech as well. And yeah, you guys can take a look and let me know if you have any ideas for me to make this a good energy deck. That would be sweet.
Cool. Well, as always, we want to thank you for listening. If you want to contact us, you can head to guardianprojectpodcast.com. You can find me at ATFlory on Twitter.
You can find me at my new tag, because I fixed it, at MPCoilMTG.
It's no longer Squeaky Pig'em.
It's no longer Squeaky Pig MTG. No, it was just M. Yeah, I fixed it.
You can also take a look for hashtag Guardian Project Pod to find our posts and episodes. We like to hear from you, so send along your comments and any topics that you'd like us to talk about, and we'll go over those on the next episode. We'll see y'all next week.
You want to talk about the website?
I did talk about the website.
You said the website?
I did. GuardianProjectPod.com. I said the website. We got a new website.
I think it's stuff about the website.
I talked about the website. Did you go to the website?
I go to the website.
There's lots of stuff there. There's a picture of me. There's a picture of you.
Yeah.
Is there our logo? Contact information is there too. So in case they didn't understand that here, the Twitter, they can...
In our P.O. box?
Our P.O. box is there.
A P.O. box that you can mail us stuff.
There's videos. There's podcast episodes.
Yeah. There's links.
And lots of fun pictures. You can click things on a website. Did you know that? We have that.
Content galore.
Our website does all that.
We should put links to our architect profiles on the architect profiles.
We should. Hey, Ryan, you want to do that? That's a high five. Nope, that was a snap and a thumbs up, not a high five.
Neither of those things.
Snap thumb?
But I'm glad you figured it out.
I can understand. Yeah,
I saw it.
You might have been the snap
thumb. I saw him do it from the fridge. The reflection on the fridge. I didn't even see him do it, but I saw that. I thought, no, I realized I was wrong.
That's incredible.
That's a shiny fridge.
This is a very shiny, clean fridge. Anyway, that's it. That's all, folks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
We did it.
That's fine.
I was like, oh man, I'm rambling. I'm making this go so long.
No, it's good. Well, there was one episode where we were
like, what they always do.
There's one episode where we're like, we need more time.